is to the budget, the commissioner's office. I do have backup for all these requests, different requests, not just mine, but other people's too. The, unless you have questions on this.
You have one for me?
Well, until you become fewer in number in the legislature, I don't think you need it.
So let me get this straight now. You're going to, this money's going to go to a project that would encourage women to run against the Atlantic Committee.
No, this project would pay for a comprehensive work that would accomplish the objectives above, namely, and the bibliography of women's activities and functions in the state, and that in addition they would be coordinating this work with the national legislative women's groups relevant to the state-owned groups. We have organization like the National Order of Women Legislators. We have organization like the Women for Political Action, women in different political groups, and they would be putting out a booklet, and that would be for use of the different women's groups, state and local libraries, and interested public.
Could we add some incentive to a study of whether women's suffrage turned out to be a good idea?
Well, it is a pretty good idea. Mr. Chairman, you know, every time we do something somewhat feminist, people get very carried away with their comments. I'm not saying anything against Brian, because he has been a very good partner in this development budget category. I back up his intent earlier, if you recall. You get a lot of flack on that one. So,
that's the way this committee is supposed to work. We help each other out.
Okay. On page 155, the administrative services.
Call Coach Barrow.
We have. Two positions, they're back in Anchorage, in Juneau, I should say.
Madam Chair, those are, what are these Senate positions? Those are not in the House budget.
Oh.
Those are Senate positions.
No, we don't. Okay. We have adopted the governor's figure. And that
is the Senate priority line?
Is it?
Update, I think we're
on the on page 156-157, Rural Development Council. We have adopted the governor's figure in this one. Those are the people that evaluate and give us information about families out in the rural areas.
Yeah, the woman who runs this fund has all these pictures in the room.
Do we have any legislative requests, Ms. Sherian?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Well,
about 1.6 million, looks like.
Yeah, right, okay.
And there are the administrative grants that well, you have quite a number of things. ABCP, Association of Village Council Presidents, Outer Continental Shop Task Force.
Let me ask you about that one.
Page
293. 138. It seems like we just had one of those for another SDS.
That is was for the Bristol Bay. This is for the Bering Sea area.
Yeah.
What's the difference? I mean, why don't we put them both in the same category?
I thought we were kind of benefited.
Huh?
I think they were supposed to both go here.
I still didn't hear what you said.
The backup I had for the two projects had different locations.
Where's the other one? I can't remember.
I believe it's an economic enterprise.
Where's that located?
On page. Page 46.
46.
This is a more appropriate place for both of the LCF ones.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the work of the department.
I just knew I remembered that we had one in there already.
I think even the fisheries education. I don't think we ought to move all those up. The ones on page 46. Alaska Business Development Center ought to stay there, but the other three or four ought to move.
Keep that in mind as we plot through.
As I said, keep page 41 to 9.
Representative Malone.
Are we still on page 158?
Yes.
I have to ask a question. What would be a study or something on the economic impact of arts in Alaska? What would that do?
The Cultural Facilities Committee already has in the education budget, although that's still subject for deletion, $75,000 for their continued existence. Now, they've been together trying to put together this cultural facility concept, and it's, you know, failed on the ballot, and now they're still trying to get money for it. So they've got $75,000 to continue. Now, here, they would also get another $25,000 to... And to answer your question, I don't know.
Okay, that was a request in the amount of about almost $47,000. We cut it down to $25,000. And the primary reason is to study the economic impact of cultural activities in their own right as local business enterprises and to identify and recommend ways the arts can be used as economic development tools. What they want to do is identify the economic impact of arts and crafts and performing arts as well as anything to do with art in terms of dollar value to the state. You know, how much we spend for those activities and how much we bring in as economic, you know, contribution to the state. An example would be the pottery, for instance. How much do we produce and how much do we sell and you know, what kind of business that has impact in the tourism as well as in the general economy of the state. The performing arts, like artists who are in residence in the state, what do they contribute in terms of the state's economic picture? Instead of importing the arts from other parts of the country. If we had artists in residence, or if we had, it's a whole gamut of the cultural community, and they want to identify that so that then they know how much we are expending and how much we are bringing in as a source of income. Anyhow, I do have the detailed material here. Apparently this has been done in other states to identify the contribution of to the economy. And they talk about
got some more information. I have one more question, and that was the level of funding for the grant for Alaska Legal Services. Is that based on prior years' grants, or is it based on federal cutbacks, or what? What my concern is that Legal Services Corporation, Alaska Legal Services Corporation, what I'd like them to do is to provide additional legal services on the Kenai Peninsula, but you know generally what's happening to their budget?
The request here was $361,000,
Last year they received a $350,000 grant from the legislature, and we just picked the same numbers last year. So if there were a new focus, it would have to come from new funding, I would guess, other than that. In addition, they are going to lose their federal funds, so this just picks up what's been the state grant towards them.
What's the CORE incorporated?
That is the Native Corporation in the Nome area.
So we're going to hire an employee for Native Corporation?
No, that they would be the proposed contractor. The energy specialist would be based in Nome, and they would be functioning the same as other energy specialists, doing audit, supervision of audits, and Brian knows more about those things.
Not about this one.
I think that's basically what it was.
Mr. Chairman, there's something about, in general, and I don't want to pick on any particular one, that's bothered me for quite some time, and I have a feeling that what we're doing and have been doing for a long time may not be quite kosher. It's let me give you an example just to make up a real outrageous one.
If we were to put an amendment in here to make an appropriation of $225,000 to Sam Cotton, Inc. to do, I'll see what this one's supposed to be, something of that sort. It seems to me like that's not quite moral. It's always been my understanding that any public body or any group that policymaking has a responsibility for appropriating public funds, that there was some kind of a legal requirement that be for public purpose or to a public entity or a public department or public organization. And since we've became rich here in the last few years, there was a time you couldn't have gotten away with something that ridiculous for 13 minutes. And we didn't have a lot of money, but I've noticed that in the last few years we seem to be doing that more and more. Are we on legal grounds to just out and out make appropriating money, just making a line item appropriation in for corporation seems to be all right if it's a Native corporation. Let's dream up another corporation. How about Arco? Good example. We're going to use extreme
for these nonprofit corporations because we don't make any appropriations of property in corporations.
No.
Arco is definitely a property in corporation.
All right. Okay, let me get back to the rest of it that bugs me just a little, Mr. Rogers. I'm not trying to make a big deal out of it, but as a matter of principle, if the purpose of the nonprofit organization, if they're what they're trying to accomplish is almost inconsequential, and the grant all goes to pay the wages of the people that are running the cotton picking thing, I have a feeling that it may not necessarily be that non-profit. It's what kind of sticks in my craw. And I just wonder if we have any rulings or guidelines laid down by the Department of Law or something as to what point do we cross the line where it's, that it just isn't cricket anymore. I don't know the answer myself. Maybe somebody does. I don't know. But it's something that bothers me just a little.
Well, frankly, I think that I'd have to agree with Representative Freeman on the named recipient grant issue. I think we are on rather shaky grounds on this. The statutory grounds we have are 3705.315, which says something here about a
just says how it's done. It doesn't say what the grounds are. I think we're well within our ground. Let's look at the ones on this page, for example. I think it's quite within our bounds to say, let's take the first one, $293,400 is appropriated for an outer continental shelf task force in Bering Straits, or that $269,000 is appropriated for Arctic Alaska Marine Science Training, or that $195,000 is appropriated to do a whale center. Where I think we are getting on shaky grounds is saying who's going to do it. And in fact, I think on virtually any items like this that I added on, I tried to do it that way, to say, leave it up to the administration to figure out who's the right person to do the job. Now, sometimes there's only one person to do the job, but if so, put it out to bid and let the one person bid and leave it at that. And
the
sections in here are at request to legislators, and I don't want to dispute with them who should get it or who shouldn't. I mean, that's their request. But I think that those which are specified by name recipients are quite likely to run into more trouble on the third floor than those where we say, for example, a whale census. We really need one on the bowhead whales. We need to know how many whales there are. And this legislature has said, we support the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission over the International Whaling Commission. Well, the only way they're going to be able to do it is to carry their cases to know how many whales there are. So I think it's a public purpose there. But whether there's a public purpose in naming the recipient, I think you've got a very good point.
Hillary's looking in right now.
I can go check if there's a letter in there.
Jade asked me to let him address the committee on the subject.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Who's that? Hogan.
The
Representative Buckleman.
Thing that we received from, these are suggestions by various legislators, as you can see, and that they wanted to identify, for their own purposes, identify which of these agencies would be receiving them, because then they would know that it is within the boundaries of their district. And I think that was in more or less a way to accommodate the request. But I don't really have any problem if we just pick out all the specific nonprofit corporations listed, knowing full well that if you do Inupiat Marine Science Training, it will probably go to the Alaska Whaling Commission. It's just that we don't list it there, but it would be understood. Same thing as the Whale Census Project. I certainly don't think it will be done by Furman Southeast or any other part of the state. So I think identifying them wouldn't be any problem at all. So if there is a real question to that, we'd have to rewrite this. But the political requests were that we include this name so that then they will see that they were accommodated in the budget process. And that, I think, basically was the reason for that. Maybe it doesn't, maybe it shouldn't be that way, but, you know, that has been the request.
You were looking at the law we passed last year?
Yeah, here's the way it works. When an appropriation is made to a department as a grant for a named recipient, which is not a municipality, the department to which the appropriation is made shall promptly notify the named recipient of the availability of the grant and request the named recipient to submit a proposal to provide the goods or services or both for which the appropriation is made. At the same time, the department shall issue a request for proposals from other qualified persons to provide the same goods or services or both in the same area. The department shall contract with the named recipient unless the Office of the Governor, with due regard for any local expertise or experience among the making proposals, determines that an award of the contract to a different party would better serve the public interest. If the contract is awarded to another party than that named by the legislature, the basis of that action shall be stated in writing at the time the grant is issued, and the purchase of the goods or services or both shall be in accordance with another section of the under competitive bid. Under competitive bidding. the problem, of course, is if you know that this money's going to go to XYZ nonprofit corporation and your ABC nonprofit, and you know that somehow the Office of the Governor has to decide you're going to get it instead of the one that lists that you want it.
Defeating the public sector, you know, preparing all the RFPs and the funding thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, just so it won't pass, I support Oral's statement. I think if the project is identified, the same as we were talking about in budget and audit, it's the same philosophy. Absolutely identical. If a need is established, we say that we want this job done, then I don't think we should name the recipient or the person who did the job.
Yeah, I think that I generally agree myself.
I just think anything else is dishonest.
I think my friend absolutely added the brief too.
Bonehead wills.
I suspect we'll probably get a lot fewer legislative requests for grants like this if we've adopted a policy of not being able to identify the nonprofit that's going to receive the money.
Mr. Chairman, in addition, it may be easier to answer to those who are asking when you say you can't do it that way.
Yeah.
If they're sincere in the need for this project, you know, write the specs for it and so on, and then if we approve the project, the need, then the person that thought of it can certainly apply. But if it follows normal good bidding practices, it's undertaken by a state.
Probably end up finding a few exceptions where everybody has agreed that a certain contractor has provided a service for the state over the years. Probably won't even have to identify them though if they're obviously the best qualified, only people who can do the job. But what we're going to be, what we end up doing is just saying to the administration, okay, you guys take it, here's your grant funds, here's a general set of rules, and then you go out and pick who you pick your friends, which it'll happen just as much as we pick our friends. So I think there's a trade-off that you may not gain very much in some cases, but I still think that I don't feel right about doing it this way either. Of course, Representative Malone had a question here.
Well, I was going to suggest that the whale census project, called the Bowhead Whale Census Project, but we're going to keep the names of the recipients, and it's not necessary to do that.
I was going to say that, you know, you take one like the Alaska Native Foundation Fisheries and Fisheries Education Program. There you've got a program which is throughout the western rural areas of Alaska, and there probably wouldn't be anyone else that could do it. But to describe the project and describe it might be difficult. So that might be an area where named recipient would be worthwhile. I don't know. Otherwise, you could end up with pages of legislative intent describing exactly what it was you want.
Applies to all of them, like this community self-help program. Every one of them seems to be in that category if you're the lead coalition for economic justice. So I don't mind rewriting these things to accommodate the wishes of members, Mr. Chairman, but we might even consider them under municipal grants, then they don't really like to be under the municipal grants because the municipal government usually take out their cut, you know, their overhead.
Charge 20% to write a check, huh?
And, you know, that's another extra that they, you know, just pass over agency, get their percentage. Okay, we'll work that over and see if you like it better after we finish with it. The next thing would be page 160, 161, the non-conforming housing loans administration. And we have adopted the governor's request.
We have two changes. Mm-hmm. We the Nome and Bethel clerk typists were changed from full-time to part-time. According to the computer run, we show
14.
The governor asked for 16 full-time and one part-time. Somehow we've got 14 full-time and three part-time. I think that was Representative Cuddy's motion.
I got a question here. It looks like, I think Senate Bill 148?
Yeah.
That requires to put loan examiners in the several rural population centers.
The original law did, too.
Pardon me?
I think the original law did.
The original law did?
Yeah.
Well, what did Senate Bill 148 do then? And House Bill 135?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that bill, by the way, is up for a hearing in Labor and Commerce on Thursday. But the bill does a couple things, but one of them it does is to provide a direct lending capability to the program rather than a. And the other is that.
What's the difference between that and having a loan examiner in Kotzebue?
What's the difference between that? Well, we're talking about legal authority now. So what this would be, with what these look like, would be the people that you'd need if you were to operate it on the basis of SB 148.
Okay.
Now, that, like I said, that bill's coming out for a hearing. I should say that the bankers think it's a real bad idea, so I don't know what's going to come out of here.
Something in its favor.
Might be.
It's interesting because wasn't it a banker that introduced that bill? Mulcahy introduced it?
Well, Mulcahy is a good deal, but
he's a banker. He's the only banker in the legislature. Trust his judgment.
He's not the only banker in the
legislature. He's a
former banker.
The other one doesn't like him.
I was thinking of Dave Cuddy, but that's
Adams.
Adams is a banker?
Is that right? Is he right?
United Bank Alaska.
I didn't know that.
Oh, is he one of the directors?
But Meekins.
Right.
He's not
anymore. Director
anymore.
Of savings and loans.
No, he's not.
He's big.
Yeah, they kicked him off.
Like his liberal lending.
No, program. he supported the wrong guy within the organization, and there was a purge of anybody that supported that guy.
Fred Meyer's
name.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he went to Fred, didn't he?
Where is Russ today?
Oh, he just said it was off.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
I might be wrong. Maybe this is something else, but I think that that's what those people would be, really.
You might be wrong, but what?
I think these are the people to examine the loans for, right now it's a purchase. It's to purchase loans, and the strong pressure, I think it's required by law that they have people out there to purchase the loans rather than having to send them all into Anchorage.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I can go into a little more detail if you want to do it. They would, if SB 148 passed, they'd need another group of people, loan closers, basically would come down to.
Yeah, and these would be
same. And these, right now the program is in the business of purchasing loans. And the idea behind it originally was there were areas in the state where the banks simply could not afford to service loans. Therefore, part of the work was going to be done by the state. There's other ways of getting at it. I suppose you can subsidize the banks to service the loans. It probably wouldn't cost them any more than it would cost the state to do it. The difference is you can't force the banks to service the loans by offering a subsidy. You can do it by having the state do it.
Why and other costs?
What is that other cost? I notice those top three positions jump up to an $85,000-$90,000 a throw.
Other costs in Fairbanks and Kotzebue.
They should show the...
I'm not following you.
On page 161A, those are the 10 positions. The total cost is one of them $85,000, one's $93,000, one's $89,000, another's $89,000, one's $91,000. It shows other costs.
I see what you're saying.
I wonder what the cost would be.
Must be other than salary and benefits office.
The one in Kotzebue is 20,000 travel and 20.4 contractual. The
one so that other cost then would be travel and contractual.
Right. Same in Nome, 20,000 travel, 18,000 contractual, and Fairbank, 20,000 travel, 20.8 contractual.
Would it still be the location that they would be maintained as indicated, I suppose?
Yes.
So the travel would be from that center?
From that center, probably into the Anchorage Central office. And then office space rentals.
Yeah, around the villages.
Contractual will be largely. Oh, and in and out of the villages, that's it, right. That's what it's for. Because they're supposed to travel a circuit. From the main community, they travel a circuit around to the villages and then come back, make their loans, and then travel a circuit back around a couple times a year. That's required by the law. Otherwise, you'd never get any loans made in the villages.
Okay, are there further questions? We have two more to go, so I think that's basically it. The next one would be page 166, 167. This is a project for the, this would be a municipal grant. This would be a project of the municipality of Anchorage, starting with an urban renewal type of thing, beautifying the neighborhood type of thing. And they selected, it wasn't my choice, but they selected Spinard as the first area to clean up. So.
What's the name of this program?
It's called the Neighborhood Housing, what is it, full title of it?
Why wouldn't that be capital rather than here?
Rehabilitation, is that where the banks participate with with the state? And they go, yeah, I know Mountain View is competing for that too. I guess they lost out to Spinard.
Yes, well, the Mountain View people decide Spinard needed that first, then they'll go to Nanaka Valley, and then maybe the next one will be Mountain View. But
Fairview and Mountain View.
But they decided the certain part of town should be fixed up first. I don't know whether this is a capital budget or not. But
it's capital. What they do is it's a contribution to a fund that people can borrow money from and rejuvenate the neighborhood, basically.
Well, that sounds good. We ought to do one of those in every district.
Yeah, it's HUD money, I believe.
What kind of money?
HUD, and then the banks and the neighborhood have to agree to participate. And then I think that apparently they're soliciting some state funds too, on a pretty small
Well, this is the one that they would be asking. I don't know whether it is capital or if it says.
I think it probably would be capital, but it doesn't make any difference. So.
It's seed money for accompanying money to be contributed from federal sources and from local financial institutions.
Who put that in, though?
I beg your pardon?
Who put that project in?
Well, it was requested to me. So I put it in.
I haven't heard of it. I just wanted to do it once.
No, this was a request that came from the municipality of Anchorage through the Spinard Community Council. And it is a joint venture of all the councils in Anchorage.
I went to a couple meetings on this in Mountain View, and they had the federal people there, and they were trying to determine which neighborhood in Anchorage ought to be first on this. And like, apparently they picked the worst one. No offense, I mean, that's just one that needed it the most, what I meant.
I don't know that she did more than Mountain View.
I agree.
It's
Mountain View has a bay streets and street lights anyway. I don't really know what they finally used to determine
Actually,
which one
gonna
was the most
Actually, they're going to fix up Spinard Road between now.
I got to take care of a little Norway here, too. I may have had a good panel.
No, but that was a request, and...
Drive.
That's in the transportation budget, is where Hagen Drive goes in.
Okay.
I thought it was going to be Hagen Hydro.
The last one would be on page 172.
We can name the capital that's been.
173.
Yeah, right.
Page 172, 173, the Kotzebue Maritime Study. And this is $25,000 to study the port of Kotzebue as a deep water port. I don't know, this should be capital.
Yeah.
Why did you put it here?
It don't matter. Let's see here now. The reason we have these things, even these pages here, is because last year we made municipal grants out in this manner. Is that right?
Chairman, how the blank pages you see our Senate project, the computer keeps the file title. There's just no money there because the House didn't have any money into those.
But the Senate's pumping in projects into that part. Have they already closed their development budget out?
You should have closed it out. It's inside Monday morning starting at 8:30.
No, I was thinking about doing ours Monday morning at 8:30, but I think I'll wait till Tuesday morning at 8:30.
I think we should.
See what they do.
Okay, that's about all I do have all the backups of all the things, and if each of you wish to have a packet of them, I'd oblige.
So the tentative schedule that I've got figured out now, Adam's wanting to wait till Tuesday afternoon to start on justice, so we'll do that. And then Monday we can start on public protection and general government. Can we start Monday morning?
Public protection.
Yeah. Public protection Monday morning at 8:30. And then Tuesday morning at 8:30 we can start on, let's see.
But you said it'd be Monday afternoon?
Well, are we going to be able to get to general government Monday? How long do you think we're going to take on public protection? That seems like one of the easiest to get through.
I don't know why we can't handle Monday morning. I mean, between 8:30 and 10.
Okay. And then what about Monday afternoon? You think we can start on general government then?
I don't know the answer to that right now.
Well, let's just count on, we're going to have to do health and social services one of these days too, Carney. We already got everything done, but there's about $12 million worth of legislative add-ons that we're trying to figure out what to do with. But as far as we've gone through those, the categories, we could present them.
We got a general governor, a flock of a batch of governors
in there. In fact, we saved about $3 or $4 million in social services budget, but then the governor found the same thing we found, so he came in with a budget amendment to reduce his budget by that amount, so we really haven't, we're even worse than where we started.
Well, don't
accept the budget. Well, Tuesday, I don't know what we'll do Tuesday. We'll try to come in and do something with the development and the university budget to see if we can close them out. And if not, we might have scheduled a couple bills that I'll announce Monday. Monday morning, we can come in and start working on public protection at 8:30. And then Monday afternoon.
I think we close out public protection.
Okay. I don't know what we'll do Monday afternoon.
Bills.
Yeah, we might do. I might do that. 10 Bill 86, right?
I guess that's it. And all we can do, budgets wouldn't be able to find the money for, and they're just yanking out of one, putting it into another, or taking funds that would lapse and reappropriate them to programs that were about to run out of money. But if you could take a look at those bills, and I'll try to bring them up this afternoon if it looks like we'll have time, unless we want to continue this budget this afternoon.
May I say one word before we go ahead? It's probably not my position to do so, but I'll do it anyway, and then you can jump on me. But I think somebody needs to jack the committee up about attending meetings. There's five of us here, and everybody knew when the meeting was. And as I said, it may not be any of my business, but I wish we could get better participation.
I noticed.
I offer that objectively, Mr. Chairman.
I wish we could, too.
me to speak to him personally?
Well,
there's an old school teacher. You want me to go down to him one at a time, tell him?
I would appreciate that.
I'm saying this not to be funny.
I mean, no, I understand. I think you might have a little better luck than I have. Somebody else at Asian office business.
Yeah, so far.
Oh, I just mentioned that we're going to probably take up this transfer bills this afternoon.
Uh-huh.
We're going to go ahead and do the public protection budget.
Okay. Yeah, I think so.
Looks like a real non-controversial budget.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Do you want to start on it?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have a information we have here is we have the short form summary with the House subcommittee recommendations, the governor's budget, agency original request, 81 budget, et cetera. The somewhat more detailed printout of the positions and other costs. We've got a stack of, like everyone else does, governor's budget amendments. And at the end of this, we have a number of legislative recommendations for the budget. Incorporation of items into this budget, which I think we'll take those up if it's agreeable with the committee when we come to those areas, partly because of the structure of the subcommittee on the legislative recommendations. In some areas, the subcommittee was not able to reach agreement on the legislative recommendations on our particular subcommittee's Representative Adams and Representative Bylsma. And in some cases, Representative Bylsma and myself did not reach agreement on the legislative recommendations, and we didn't incorporate items in the budget in which we didn't have agreement, but I have the recommendations for the committee's consideration, and we'll come to those. If you start with the summary sheet and go to the back of it, the last page of the three-page summary sheet, see the breakdown on the final budget there. Generally, we've got a budget of about 34 some odd million. Of that, almost $5 million is debt service, or $43 million, sorry. Of that, about $5 million is debt service. And in the subcommittee recommendations, minus the legislative request, got a on the order of like a 1% change. This budget's a collection of, in most areas, is a collection of fairly small programs. The major ones that we have in here are the Department of Labor programs, and we have, of course, the Department of Military Affairs budget, the biggest part of any agency budget would be the military affairs, and as far as I know, almost all their budget appears here. So that's sort of an outline of the thing. In the review of this budget, the subcommittee focused on certain areas.
rather than trying to review the entire budget in detail. Those areas were the Department of Labor in the Workers' Compensation, Fisherman's Fund, Second Injury Fund, the mechanical inspection functions of the department, because those areas seem to be important to the service to the public. There's been a lot of legislative work done on workers' compensation. Inspection programs are aimed directly at the safety of the public in Alaska. We've got other regulatory programs. Those regulatory programs in the Department of Commerce. And we've got inspection programs in the Department of Environmental Conservation.
And in that area, the subcommittee put some effort into reviewing the seafood inspection program because of the activities and efforts in the state over time to build up the seafood industry in Alaska, and it seemed like it was a natural area to focus on as far as what's important. As far as application of the subcommittee guidelines, since in most cases we're dealing with fairly small programs that seem to be aimed at pretty basic public purposes, and the funding levels that are recommended by the governor are very close to continuation levels with some exceptions, did not apply a general 5% reduction against these budgets. And there are not very many new positions in the budget, although some that came in through budget amendments. There were some that were added by the subcommittee. And so that's large printout form itself. And Mr. Chairman, if that's the way you'd like to proceed, if anybody's got any questions on what I've gone over so far. And in this, I'd like to ask Mr. Schroeder, if I don't stop for a comment or stop to make something clear, Bob, I'd appreciate it if you'd just interrupt me and bring out whatever relevant information I'm missing as we go along. Here's all the budget amendments. Yeah, these are in the same order as they appear in the budget. So, starting off with the Office of Consumer Protection in the Department of Law, the budget is basically a continuation level budget is recommended by the governor. The reason, of course, in a lot of these areas, the numbers are lower than the original continuation request are that the rent monies were moved into the Department Administration budget. So I think that's true all the budgets this year. And I don't have any particular comments on the Office of Consumer Protection. People have questions or legislative recommendations, maybe they would bring them up this time. The figure subcommittee is recommending is the figure that the governor has there.
So the rent, you say, was that under contractual?
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's about the same as it was last year, but
yeah,
quite a bit less than the request. But the request number included the rent, but the number that you and the governor both came up with, has that taken out and transferred to administration?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. That's why the figures are lower than the continuation request.
And aside from that, basically the reason that the figures are higher than last year is mostly change in salary levels. The rest of it is the governor's inflation allowance. What was the amount that was taken out there?
No, I just wanted to make sure that was where it had gone. I mean, that was, you know, went from 141 to 94, and that was what had happened. You'd taken them, that was where the money left, so that's right. Good enough. I don't have any other questions on that.
Yeah, in this particular budget, for instance, $47,000 it was hauled over to the Department of Administration for the rent consolidation. And we'll see that all of them like we do in the other budgets.
And your intent, Hugh, were to establish and operate the toll-free service for all residents. How does that work now?
That's a program recommended by the agency. Mm-hmm. Basically, what we checked into that, what it comes down to is that it doesn't just include rural areas, it includes any area that where people want to make a collect call into the agency, whether they do this through the establishment of a Zenith number or just collect calls. I'm not sure that they worked that part of it out, but they wanted some money to pick up the collect call so that people would be able to make more use of the get their complaints in, basically. We did check it out. It's not limited to rural areas in the sense that we look at rural areas. It's just include any area where they didn't have an office is what it comes down to. If there's been no questions on that, we can go on to the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. And in this area here, we have a minor change from the governor's budget in that the position request that they have in there was not being recommended by the subcommittee. Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Chairman, I don't understand why there's any funding for the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. By law, they sunset this June 30th, and it'd be my opinion that any agency that sunsets should be zero in the budget, and that the bill continuing them, and I know there is one, should have a fiscal note, and because in fact passage of the bill is the only thing that brings the funding. It'd be my recommendation that we zero this and request the bill back in finance so that we can look at the fiscal impact of continuing the commission. By law, no money can be spent on this until that law is changed.
Right. Well, obviously, I think we'd zero it out in pre-conference if the bill didn't pass. But
oh, no. It's,
I think that's what he's saying.
Well, no, I'm saying zero it out until the bill passes and do a fiscal note. I think it's, in fact, that bill bypassed our committee, even though it has a significant fiscal impact, $538,000 fiscal impact.
Here we have it.
No, we don't have the bill.
Well, this is the same thing. It's the money. I think it's, you know, maybe you're making a discussion of the policy there, but I think the policy is
something of a sunset of recreating a board or commission, not going through this committee. I think is a matter, significant matter of policy.
Well, I think the legislature decides to continue it, they'll get the funding, and if the legislature doesn't decide to continue it, they won't get the funding.
You need to do that for any piece of legislation. Why should any piece of legislation come out? Just stick it in the budget.
Yeah, one comment, Mr. Chairman. If the commission itself is, the board itself is not continued, I presume there will be a need for some sort of administrative regulation of this particular activity in the state. Maybe I'm all wrong on it. And
so where that function would go, I'm not clear on that, but I suspect you'd need some money to carry out some function through a different some regulatory function. However, I don't know any recommendation on that part.
Well,
Mr. Chairman,
Maybe we could flag this item for further consideration.
That'd be and appropriate.
I think there is a question. If you don't have the board doing it, somebody's going to have to do something, I presume. Otherwise you might, revenue itself might probably have to do something. But are there other questions on this area? If not, go on to the Department of Labor programs in occupational safety, and did spend a little time reviewing this program here and its effectiveness in the state. Not a great deal of in-depth review, but this one has been somewhat controversial as far as its impact. Some of the things that the subcommittee did look into were to, to what extent could has the need for a warrant to inspect places of work affected the program. The department related to us that they could get warrants when they needed them from the courts, and that's their view on it. One area, rather issue in this area, let's put it that way, the legislature, I believe, needs to look at, and I don't have any immediate recommendations on it, something I think needs to be looked at over a period of time, maybe next year, is that currently the occupational safety inspections on offshore development for oil and gas are under the jurisdiction of the Federal Department of Labor, and I'd requested through the department information from the Federal OSHA program on those inspections and their level of effort. So far I don't have any of that information,
but with increasing offshore development in Alaska, where presumably Alaska workers may be involved with the accelerated OCS development program,
I think it needs that's something that needs some sort of attention by either the state or federal governments, and I think probably the state, since Alaska workers are involved.
What happened there here? There was some sort of reorganization or something? I see that.
Well, it was a reorganization of the budget itself. The functions themselves, I don't think there's any significant change in the functions, except in this area, the Department of Labor has been trying to, or continuing to try to develop their voluntary compliance program, working with businesses and employers to request inspections and get recommendations as to how their particular operation might be improved. That's where they seem to be placing their emphasis on the thing. We discussed the possibility of maybe in this area just running a program with state general funds, which would probably require additional general funds, but since to do that would involve rewriting the scope of authority in the law and redesigning a program different from the federal government, will be on the subcommittee's scope of work.
Basically, we said the same people on page 19. Those were all the employees that were an agglutination of the employees that were under general administration, compliance, health, training, planning standards, and all that. They just moved them all down there. Why did they do that? Just any special reason?
You go ahead, Bob.
Mr. Chairman, the agency just felt that splitting those things out into five separate components was unnecessary, and during the governor's budget process, they ball them all into one.
We ended up with fewer than, let's see, how many we do have last year? Well, continuation would have been 46, so we've got 43 this year. That's, I don't know how it was, I can't figure out what.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, what the difference between fiscal year 81 basically is they discontinued two positions coming into the fiscal year 82 budget, two positions that were supported by federal funds that have been discontinued. Then they further transferred three positions out of this budget to bring you down to the 43 number.
Transferred three out.
Right, to other components in the Department of Labor.
So you started with 40, how many?
48.
48, okay.
They deleted two positions because of reduction of federal funds, and they transferred three more.
That's why the continuation number is 46, and then they transferred three and came to 43, okay.
Where did three go to? I mean, they're still...
They're in the Department of Labor.
Pardon?
They're in the Department of Labor.
One thing I might say on this is I did a writing request from the commissioner to go ahead and break these figures back out into the original sub-programs that we had so we could kind of take a look in a comparison as to how they viewed that consolidation of funds. And I didn't get any answer back from the department on that. In fact, with the exception of the workers' comp area, I didn't get any information back from the department on several requests that were made. I think that's got a lot to do with the fact that there's a high percentage of federal funds in their budget, and also the view of the incumbent commissioner, the relationship between the legislative and executive branches. That's my own personal biased opinion.
You want to, I don't have any question on that.
Well, that's a large chunk of this particular budget component. I don't know if people do have other questions on it, but in this area, the this particular program that we're just talking about, indication in the budget is prepared, it's going to be affected by certain changes in federal funding, and probably be further affected by federal contracts. I think that's something we can expect, but what the changes are likely to be.
You know, whether they're going to cut the federal funds in half or something like that right now. A lot of information on it, so. But of course, that had a significant effect on the program since it's something over half federal funds at present. In the Department of Labor budget, then the next three components: the Fisherman's Fund, Second Injury Fund, and Workers' Compensation. There was a fair amount of subcommittee review. Both the Fisherman's Fund and the Second Injury Fund face funding problems, and maybe take them out of order a little bit, and because that's sort of the way we approach the subcommittee. In the Second Injury Fund, did we get the budget amendment here we go. Yeah,
Yeah, is it because of the, partly because of the, there we are. Partly because of the pressure on the fund to meet its expenditures, the governor's recommending that the administration of this fund be carried from state general funds rather than the program receipts assessments against the insurance. And what this fund is involved in, or its purpose, is to offset and provide some of the costs for those people that are permanently disabled, retraining costs, vocational rehabilitation costs. And there is a supplemental appropriation, I think, pending in the, I think in this committee at this time, House Bill 297. We probably do need to make a decision what to do with this. There's also House Bill 159, I think another bill submitted by the governor that would increase the contributions to the fund. If some form of legislation doesn't pass to increase the contributions to the fund, then this fund may require a supplemental appropriation, or probably will require a supplemental appropriation, or some form of general fund appropriation during fiscal year 82. What eventually, with the pressure on the fund, what eventually is going to happen is that the costs for the purposes of the fund aren't going to be met, and the people aren't going to get the services. Now, there's other ways to do that, but I wouldn't, you know, personally wouldn't want to see that happen. So the subcommittee is recommending that the general fund carry the administrative costs of the fund, and because of the the need to deliver services to people that are disadvantaged through work-related accidents in this area, second injury fund, and in the workers' compensation component of the budget, we are recommending the increases that the governor is requesting. I don't know what's going to become of HB 159. I can't remember the number of the other bill the governor submitted.
94.
House Bill 94.
Brian, you had a comment on it?
Well, yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, that bill came out of the Interim Workers' Compensation Study Commission, and there's been some disagreements among the commission, and the commission has since disbanded. However, the commission, perhaps the only thing the commission still unanimously agrees on is that the new formula is required for the second injury fund. The commission was early on recommended that the administration of the second injury fund be borne by the general fund, but I think the majority would recommend against passage of the supplemental. That'll take the pressure off getting the new formula in. We really do need to raise more money to get into the second injury fund. On administration of workers' compensation, again, the commission recommended approval of all the governor's new positions. One of the things that keeps the costs of workers' comp to the employer up is the delays within the system force workers to go and seek legal counsel and drag out the whole process. And it's the commission's belief that these new positions will help to streamline the process and cut costs. One area that the commission was planning to continue work on that might save the most money on in the long run is revamping the state rehabilitation system for workers' comp. And originally was planning to do that study as part of the study commission. However, since that's been disbanded, I would recommend we consider on the administration of workers' comp getting them some funding for a study and recommendation on rehabilitation, on the state rehabilitation program.
I'm a little confused here, Ryan. The bill that you're talking about, 297, has $600,000 as supplemental
for this
line item. You're recommending not to go with that.
That's correct.
And is that your recommendation? I mean, that's when you said you thought the committee ought to make a decision, I'm not sure what you meant by that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, any decision, as long as it's conscious, is fine with me. I think that Brian and I are both talking about the same point. The fund needs the money to carry out its purposes. Now, there's a couple of ways of providing that, and I'm not sure how House Bill 94-159, I didn't really work on that legislation, would affect the current cost of the fund.
What are those bills? Were they still in Labor and Commerce?
House Bill 94 is scheduled on Thursday, I think, to come out of Labor and Commerce. For this one, I'm not sure how they'd affect the cost of the fund in the current fiscal year and what the supplemental would be aimed at. I think they would cover the problem in the future fiscal year. Maybe you got some ideas in there, Brian. Yeah. My feeling is that funding should be attached to the fiscal note to House Bill 94 so that essentially $600,000 would catch the fund up to its current status. And the only pressure there is to fix the formula is the fact that some people are having to wait a long time to get reimbursed from the fund because it doesn't have that $600,000 in it. And if we were to appropriate that without changing the formula, then the pressure to change the formula would be put off until next year, and next year would be in exactly the same situation we are right now, where there's not enough money and we're faced with changing the formula or adding the money. By putting the $600,000 in a fiscal note, then when the new formula goes into effect, they start clean with a fund that is not bankrupt. So
what about the remainder of this year?
For the remainder of this year, that would be the way to do it. The fund carries over from year to year, so if they were to receive the money in a fiscal note on House Bill 94, they could make all of their back payments until after.
Chairman,
we have in this, it shows up in this page, second injury fund, we have some new positions there, and we have more in the, move into the workers' comp program. Now, Representative Rogers mentioned that the commissioner, the task force is recommending the increases, and I think that's probably true that people on, although I have to want to make clear to the members of the committee, I haven't seen a written recommendation signed off by the commission on it. Maybe it exists, but I haven't seen it. And we did talk to Representative Rogers, as a legislative member of that working group on this program during the September review. And basically, justification for these positions is to deal with the backlog that's in the program, listed as running from 3 to 5 months. And I think it probably is true that the longer it takes to get things resolved, the more likely it is that people are going to seek legal counsel, and that adds to the state's cost as well as the private cost. And I think that this, as nearly as I can tell, these positions are justified for the purpose of the program. The alternative would, of course, to the retraining and rehabilitation is to keep the people on some sort of public assistance, and I think that to avoid that, the very reason program is set up. The
So,
in addition to the additional cost borne by the public, by the private employer and the state through public assistance, the real cost, I think, is the cost for the injured worker who, you know, when somebody's hurt badly in an industrial accident, it changes their life significantly, and going through the trauma of the injury and it often, you know, change in ability to perform a job, and then have to be fighting for months to get the payment which is due, and ultimately getting it, but having that long delay, I think, has some pretty strong cost on the individual worker, and it essentially is a delay of justice, which I think is denial of justice.
It's often just the court or the lawyers fighting back and forth.
Well, it's also that the workers' comp board has such a backlog of cases. We added a board 2 years ago, and we added another board last year. We're recommending another board this year. Just the backlog, they can't physically process it fast enough. And they have reduced their backlog significantly in the last 2 years, but there's a long way to go. They also are, we approved a computer system last year for them to start being able to track them by computer. When that's fully operational next January, that should also reduce the delays and make it easier to find a file when you have to find it. It's amazing that they're doing as good a job as they are with people they have.
In this area that you got a decision making board that although not maybe not necessarily in a strict legal sense they're sitting something like judges. They have to come up with opinions and all that and recommendations or decisions on cases. We have a pretty, I don't think we call this a small program that we have here, spending several millions of dollars on the thing, and then the administration of it alone over a couple of million dollars. I don't know whether the Workers' Comp Commission or Task Force did any sort of audit. I'd recommend that the legislature, through the audit division, conduct both a performance and financial and performance audit, and make some comparisons between how the decision making process works here, compared with how the state court system has handled some of the same types of processing. I think that, generally speaking, the court system is fairly, fairly efficient in that area, at least with the time and responsibility to resolve disputes and differences. And that type of audit might lead to some recommendations that both the administration and the legislature find useful in restructuring the whole program. Maybe it wouldn't, but I think it's worth the effort. And I don't know if you put down into the, we do when we come to the turn to the next page, the administration of the workers' compensation program on page 24, at the bottom of the page, you see some, it amounts to legislative intent, but it's really a request to the legislature, and I wanted to put this down here so it wasn't forgotten. That this committee requests the Division of Audit to conduct the performance audit of the program. Brian?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, in addition to this division, there is another division of state government that, laid in there on workers' comp, that's the Division of Insurance. And I would recommend that this request extend also to the performance audit of the Division of Insurance's monitoring of workers' comp insurance. And there is one one big problem area that we're having the performance audit and thing up, and that's the regulation of self-insurance by the workers' comp board. That probably function could be, in my opinion, transferred to the Division of Insurance. They're allowing self-insurance without the series of monitoring, and because they have no personnel to do the monitoring, and it could have some severe problems in the future.
Okay, thank you.
The numbers for the administration of the workers' compensation program are over in the next page, so it's 25, and the significant change you can see there is basically the additional positions that recommended by the governor, total of 8 positions. Some of those are connected with the data processing system that the Representative Rogers mentioned. Some of them are additional workers' comp officers and clerical support. I don't know. I'm not sure that I understand all the issues that affect the compensation in terms of the administration program launch, and that's one of the reasons we request for the component of it. But one of the things we're faced with here, and I don't know if it's going to be incorporated in House Bill 94 or whether it is the president to look at the bill, but
they're faced with a 20-day deadline on making decisions where it's proposed to raise that to 30 days, at least in House Bill 159. That I would think that change should probably be incorporated in House Bill 94 if it's adopted, if it can fit under the title. Any comments on that, Brian?
Mr. Chairman, most of the good recommendations of House Bill 159 could be accommodated under House Bill 94, but that might serve to delay the bill for a year.
By just changing in 20 or 30 days, you think it would?
That's the whole deal there. There's two bills. That's the reason why there's two bills.
Well, Mr. Chairman, everything that's in House Bill 94 is also in House Bill 159. The commission recommendation included what the governor had recommended, though we have a slightly different formula. And the commission signed off on the bill in January, but following that, some members and all of the organizations that the members represent changed their minds on sections of the bill. And some are taking the position that the bill, nobody seems to really disagree vehemently with anything except for one or two sections of the bill. With the majority of the bill, there's no problem. It's just that people are afraid that by letting the technical problems be corrected, they're not going to have a vehicle to achieve their other objectives in workers' comp. And so people are afraid to let the system be fixed up, fear that there won't be enough emphasis to try to hang on their amendments, essentially. So what was an attempt to try to settle issues between labor and management in a relatively, in a setting outside the legislature didn't work, essentially.
Mr. Chairman, in some of the justification submitted to the governor's budget amendment of $410,000, stated that the legislation introduced House Bill 159, which among other changes would raise the statutory limit from 30 days to 20, would help, but without additional personnel and funding, the other problems won't be solved. They go on to say, during the first 6 months of fiscal year 81, approximately 42 to 60 days has elapsed from the close of a hearing record to the issuance of a board decision and order. So
you know, I'm not quite sure what to do about that. Obviously, if you move the statutory limit back to 60 days, it might solve some of their time problems, but it doesn't help out the purpose of the program, which is to try to get, you know, a no-fault insurance system designed to, you know, avoid civil litigation, to limit claims, and to provide immediate and appropriate help to people. Isn't really, purpose of those aren't really served by running the time. And it's, I don't know how to draw a direct correlation between the backlog and the cost of workers' compensation insurance in Alaska. No doubt there's some sort of connection, but to the extent it takes more time, to the extent that more attorney's fees or other or fees on the part of other people are involved costs than over a period of time, then I suspect that's eventually also reflected in rates. But at any rate, based partly on on the information that was related to the subcommittee from Representative Rogers, and partly on the information submitted to the subcommittee in the budget amendment, subcommittee is recommending the increase that the governor's budget amendment provides for. I don't know. I got a question. Brian, is this task force or some modification of it anticipated to continue work? How are we going to get at these things, you know?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's certainly a problem. However, the members of the commission representing the labor side in particular felt that they'd been double-crossed and decided they didn't want to continue to participate in a process where they were going to be sandbagged. Former Senate President Croft in particular was quite upset at the way that an agreement was reached by the commission at the January meeting, and then management members changed their position, and he and Mr. Carlson essentially said they didn't feel it was worth pursuing the commission. There are two major areas the commission was planning to work on in the next year. The biggest one was revamping the rehabilitation system. That could be done by funding a study of rehabilitation with recommendations through the Division of Workers' Comp. And I've asked them to prepare for me a budget as to what they think it would cost. That study could be required by House Bill 94, or we could put it in the budget. It might be better to put it in the fiscal note for 94. The area of benefit modifications, the management members have a number of changes they'd like to make, which would generally lower benefits, and the labor members have a number they'd like to make, which would generally raise. And to look at the fiscal impact of that, we can ask the National Council on Compensation Insurance, and they can run the numbers. As for the other changes, essentially that's going to be done through the committee process.
Yeah, I think there's two areas in this whole workers' compensation thing that need to be looked at, and if some sort of commission, task force, blue ribbon panel or something consisting of representatives of interest and affected groups can't do the job, maybe the legislature should just do it themselves without basing it on the recommendations of to reach agreement between opposing in a committee that consists of very much opposing points of view. So the two areas are the administration of the program itself, that is making it work, getting the claim settled in a timely and equitable manner, and then the cost of workers' compensation insurance in Alaska. And the based on my own limited review last fall of the regulation of insurance by the Division of Insurance, I don't think the state has any capacity in that area whatsoever. I think that our laws, our program for the regulation of insurance, the administration of itself, would need to be substantially revamped in order to get at the actual cost of workers' compensation insurance. On this side of it here, how the program's administered, if we want the program to work, try to plow through all the claims and get them settled, I don't know what the alternative is to providing additional people.
Mr. Chairman, I agree, and the Commission, as of January, agreed with Representative Malone on that, and in fact, those were the first two issues tackled, and at one point agreed to by the Commission, and included in House Bill 159 are a number of procedural and technical changes that have to do with administration of workers' comp, and also included, and probably the biggest changes, real fundamental changes in the program, are in the insurance area, where the regulation of self-insurers was turned over to the Division of Insurance. That would have required, I think, a fiscal note has three new positions in the Division of Insurance to adequately regulate it. And the biggest area that would affect premium costs, was right now workers' comp. The rate is set by a group called the National Council on Compensation Insurance. That's an organization of all of the insurance industry, and they fix rates. And
my opinion, that got the fox guarding the hen house.
Well, it's exactly the fox guarding the hen house, and our recommendation to the Commission was to allow greater competition in that area by saying, okay, we know that 70 cents of your premium dollar goes for claims and the rest goes for your overhead costs. We will require, you can file any rate as long as it's going to be sufficient to cover that 70 cents for claim costs, and we'll let all the companies compete for how much their overhead costs are going to be, rather than saying you've got to charge a dollar in order to provide that 70 cents claim and 30 cents benefit. And Alaska would be the first state to go to open rating. It's just partial deregulation, essentially, of compensation insurance. Oregon and one other state are on the verge also. And that, we thought, was the most significant thing done by the Commission. There are some that fear there's not enough competition and the pre-market won't work in the Alaska insurance. So that could happen. But I think those two issues are addressed pretty substantially in House Bill 159 or Senate Bill 179. In the meantime, I'd recommend beefing up the staff of the Division of Insurance so they can regulate adequately.
I'm not sure they'll do it because of our laws, but we'll cover that when we get to it. Mr. Chairman, I don't know if people have other immediate questions on this area. The subcommittee recommendation for the administration of the workers' comp program is 2315.2 in all state general funds. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to go back to the fisherman's fund for a moment here. No, we didn't get any Royce. We didn't get any governor's budget men in on this one, did we?
No, that's probably
the letter.
You're expecting one?
Well, Mr. Chairman, this